I think I'm right in saying that, right now, obviously, so many people going through so many different things every single day. And we keep saying this, everyone's on a different page every day. Everyone's going through their own emotions. But personally, I've heard so many horrendous stories of people taking their own lives. And I think we've seen a lot of that in the press over the past 12 months. It's coming up to 12 months exactly when Caroline Flack took her own life, which is unbelievable when you think about what's happened since then. Male suicide is up, and with Jane from James's Place, which is a great charity, a great centre here in Liverpool on Catherine Street. Jane, just tell me first off what James's Place actually is and what you do.
Right. So, hi, Jay. Thanks very much for talking to me today. I think it's about a year ago that you were here last time, because it wasn't that long ago after poor Caroline died. But we are a small charity. We operate here in Liverpool, and we offer one-to-one talking therapy for men who are in a suicidal crisis.
So it's just men that you focus on, isn't it? And there's a reason for that, isn't there? Just tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that we as a charity focus on men is that we were founded by a family who lost their son to suicide in 2006. But also, we do know that, you know, 3/4 of the people who die by suicide are men. And whilst that's not to say that, you know, that women who die by suicide don't matter, as a charity with limited resources, we just wanted to concentrate on the area of highest need. And over the years that we've been operating as a therapy centre, it's been really focusing on men and developing our intervention, working with men, that I think that's been the key to our success, really, that the therapy that we do works with the men who come along. They're not getting a kind of one-fits-all therapy. They're getting something that was developed with men in mind, and in an environment that was developed with men in mind as well.
Jane, am I right in saying, because personally I've heard so many stories of people that I know through friends, you know, we've read in local papers about people taking their own lives, men taking their own lives, and that number seems to have gone up. We had a big case in the paper recently with the guy who owns Sugar Hut, who again kind of put it into the forefront of people's minds. Has suicide risen since lockdown, since the pandemic began?
As far as I know, no, because we don't, but that some of that is because the way that the numbers are counted, and we tend to be a year behind. So as of, you know, so most of us who work in the suicide prevention field will rely on the figures that are produced by the Office of National Statistics, and then that are kind of filtered through a study called the National Confidential Inquiry into Suicides and Homicides, which is run by Professor Lewis Appleby. But necessarily, they're about a year out of date. There are some, I mean, every area has like a suicide prevention board, where we have what's called real-time surveillance, but that is more about making sure that people who die by suicide and their families, but that their families and the response to families is organised. So I can't really sort of say, and it's really hard, isn't it? And I'm not trying to fudge or anything. It's just, because of the way things, you know, a suicide is only counted once it's been confirmed by the coroner, and the coronial system takes a while to work. So we're always working that bit behind.
Okay.
I think we know that people reporting distress has gone up. I think that there are surveys that are indicating that people who are trying to access help with mental health problems more than they were before the pandemic. I think very briefly, what we have seen in terms of this, you know, we use an evaluation framework to see whether our work is being effective, and we ask people sort of standard questions and give them a score. So what we found towards the end, you know, towards sort of July, August, September, October last year, and it's continued, is that kind of our the score of people coming into our service is higher. So in the previous years, our average score coming in from out of 140 was around 85 to 90. and our average score has actually gone up to over 100. So something, we think that something is happening. By the time men get to us, they're probably experiencing perhaps more significant mental health symptoms and higher levels of distress. But those are small figures, but it seems to be what other people in other you know, in other places where they work with people in suicidal crisis are saying.
It's funny though, Jane, isn't it? Because obviously it's one of those things, lockdown, where you are isolated from the rest of the world. You are left to let your mind run away with you, for instance. And depression kind of naturally comes with a situation like that. Yeah. So surely people must be thinking, there must be plans in place to think, right, this is going to be a problem. We need to sort this.
I think most people who work in the field would predict that the problems would actually come once lockdown is finished. I think there is, having worked in this field for a long time, there are a couple of misconceptions about when maybe the highest rates, you know, if you were looking at sort of annual variations, a lot of people assume that more people die in the winter. Actually, more people take their life in the kind of spring and summer. And whilst nobody knows, you know, very explicitly why that happens, it seems to be there's something about a kind of, we're all going through a tough time, everybody hates the winter, and then as everybody else life seems to be getting better, because it gets better in the spring and summer, you're stuck still in this terrible space, and that's when you feel actually everybody else isn't feeling as bad as me now. So as we all move out of lockdown and kind of back to sort of normal, certainly my concern is that the people who were already struggling before will be even in a worse situation, but the people who kind of feel left behind by the recovery will be the ones that we're worried about.
It's a year since Caroline Flack took her own life. A lot of people talking about suicide after that. You know, we had this big Be Kind campaign.
I think it makes people reflect on how they behave, you know, and they reflect on how perhaps they've dealt with people in their own lives. I think I don't know Caroline. I didn't know Caroline Flack. It seems like people were quite cruel to her publicly. You know, there was a lot going on. I guess we know that, you know, the things that men talk to us about in therapy, the feelings that they're experiencing, they talk quite a lot about shame and humiliation and that very public response to her difficulties. I would imagine that those were a couple of the emotions that she was experiencing. They're very powerful. And they can feel very negative. But I also think it perhaps highlighted to people that somebody's life can look pretty great. And they can say, well, you know, she was rich, she had all these things going for her. Why did she let it get to her? Why did she, you know, how could that have been something that she wanted? She felt death was better than dealing with it. You don't know what's happening to people. From the outside, the problem might look surmountable, but when you're in it, clearly she got to a place where her own death felt preferable to dealing with this kind of maelstrom that she was living in. And I think that when you hear about somebody like her, it gives all of us a chance to think, how would we want to talk to somebody who we were concerned about? And I think in Caroline's case, there were friends around who were concerned that she was a risk of suicide. But perhaps it might give all of us a bit of confidence to ask our own friends. You know, if somebody like that can do it and you're struggling, actually, you know, are you worried about yourself? Are you worried that you're going to act on those thoughts?
We've got to say, haven't we, and it's something that we see a lot, but it's so true, and you can tell us more about this. There is literally always another option, isn't it? There's always another alternative, and there's always support out there. There's always another alternative, isn't there? There's always an option. There's always a way out of those thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of the things that I talk to the men that I work with in therapy, sometimes I get them to think about you know, the room that I'm sitting in now is in the first floor. And if you jumped out of the window of this room, you'd probably hurt yourself and you could possibly kill yourself. So I have them think about what would make us jump out of that window, you know, and what chain of events would have to happen. And we talk about being locked in and nobody coming and, yeah, but you could phone or it's, you know, there's this, the loo, there's this, you know, there's lots of things. And eventually the option, you know, but for me, it would be a fire, that there was a fire that I couldn't get out through the fire and I'd have to run away from it. And the men, you know, people who are in that suicidal crisis, it's like they're in a burning building and all the doors have gone. There's no other way through. And that feels like the only option. But they're not. They're not in a building that's on fire. There is no fire. They're thoughts and feelings that they're experiencing, not a fire. So there is something that we can do about it. You know, we help the men to make a sense of the thoughts and feelings that they're experiencing, and just, you know, you've seen how we do it, Joe. We get them to literally lay cards on a table that make a sense of that kind of burning building that's going on in their head. And sometimes the guys sort of say to us afterwards that almost feels like enough, just seeing it and seeing debt, not talking to family, drinking too much. It's like, right, I need to sort the debt out now. I need to go and tell my mum that I've run up $5,000 in credit card debt. I need to stop drinking. But when it's all kind of rushing around, you're on fire.
Yeah. And we can all relate to that, can't we? You know, I'm related to that personally in terms of running a business right now. It feels like there's so much, and you think some days I wake up and think there's just too much to do. And it's just about writing it down, laying it out flat, creating a list, and ticking off each element one by one. I know it's not as easy as that all the time, but that's a good start off point, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, most of us are not facing a life-threatening situation. Most, you know, and I know that there will be the odd person whose debt perhaps is related to criminal activity, or who perhaps is really, really in a situation where they've got some sort of life-threatening situation. But the vast majority of us, nobody goes to prison for debt anymore. You go to prison for committing a crime, but you don't go to prison for running up a credit card debt. You don't lose everything because you've lost your job. You know, there are people around who can start making a sense. You know, we work with men, and we ask them before every session to do like two questionnaires. One is about how they're feeling, and one is about it's trying to get them to think about whether they feel trapped. And it does ask questions. The questions it asks are like, I feel like I'm in a deep hole that I can't get out of. I feel like I need to run away. And what we're seeing is that sometimes the mental health questions about sort of health and well-being and how they're feeling sort of kind of vary a bit and then come down. But once we can get that feeling of being trapped to reduce, everything else follows. So sometimes it's about helping them to see the solutions themselves. Sometimes it's about supporting them. We get a lot of support from like social prescribing at Citizens Advice. You know, sometimes it's about saying, well, just go home and open the envelopes, you know, open them up. Let's bring them back. Let's try and make a sense of it. Let's just sort of make a start. So those problems are all solvable, and we might not be the person who can help you solve the problems, but we can help you get to the stage where you're ready to do it and you've kind of got the headspace to do it as well.
Jane, you've only been open now just a couple of years, James Place in Liverpool. How many men have you helped so far, and how many do you help in a week, for instance? Give us a kind of snapshot of the great work.
We have got... count them. We've got some 24 guys who are accessing our support at the moment, and since we started in July 2018, we've had more than 400 men come through over that time. And we've had I can say in a way that sometimes makes me tear up a bit. You know, these men have saved their own lives, really. They've come and let us help them, and they sort of come back and tell us what it's meant to them. And it is quite amazing to hear them, you know, talk about, say things like, you know, if it wasn't for us, they wouldn't be here. And it, you know, out of that 400, if we look at the statistics and how many men, you know, it would, I know that all 400 of those men may not have, you know, without our help, probably a significant number of them wouldn't have died anyway. But, you know, we know that some of them didn't die because, you know, they've told us that they didn't die because we helped them. And then a significant number of the men's lives are better.
It's incredible.
Because we helped them, you know, and along the way, they stayed in work whilst this was happening. They stayed at university. They didn't lose other things that can sometimes go along with that kind of state of distress. They got to the crisis point and got help, and the crisis didn't lead to another set of crises that meant they became homeless, or they lost their jobs, or they lost their place at university. So,
well, listen, that is happening right now in Liverpool, but it's a charity, James's Place. We've got to stress that, and many charities right now really going through it. We're talking to lots and lots of them on the Guide Liverpool in the coming weeks, based here in Liverpool. What can we do right now to help, Jane? Because every little penny we can offer, and people are skint right now, let's be honest. But we do need support for our charities, and you guys are all one of them. What would you say to people who are thinking about donating to James's Place?
We're not one of those charities. What would I say to people? If you're thinking of donating to James's Place, you will be donating to a charity that saves lives. That we know that the impact we have on the men who come here and on their families, you know, changes their lives for the better. And in some cases, you know, means that, you know, we've not got families in Liverpool right now who are sitting around talking about their dead father or their dead husband or their dead brother. And they, you know, the men themselves would tell you that that's the case. You know, there are lots of ways you can raise money for us. We've got just, you know, the website has got just a donate button, but lots of people seem to be drawn to doing those kind of mad male challenge events, like climbing up things or rowing across things and stuff. So I think there's something about, think about something that will improve your mental health, and as part of improving your mental health will actually, you know, throw a bit of money our way as well. So we do get a lot of people who do runs and cycle rides, and they combine, you know, improving their own mental health with giving us some money.
Bringing some money in. Yeah. Well, listen, check it all out. That donate button is the key there on the James's Place website. Jane, just finally, for anyone watching that might be worried about a loved one, or anyone who's going through hell right now at home during this lockdown, what would you say to them? Because first off, we've got to stress that you're still open, you're still taking referrals, and anyone can get in touch whenever they want with James's Place.
Yeah, so our therapy is offered sort of during the day, during the week, but we do have a website where you can refer people through, and if you leave a message on our answer machine, if we're not here, we'll always get back to you. But if you're worried about yourself, you're worried about the man in your life, whether it's your brother or your dad or your son, you know, let them know about us and give us a call, and we can help you to look at the referral form. The website tells you a little bit about what we do and who we can help, but we will, if we can't help you, we'll try and make sure that you get the right information to go to someone who does. And if we can help you, you know, you could be calling us on Monday, and you'd be, one of our therapists will be talking to you on Monday afternoon, and you could be in our centre on Tuesday starting your first therapy session. And if you can't come into our centre, or if it's not safe for you because you've got health issues and or you're concerned about getting about the city during this pandemic, we can see you at home sort of over the internet, and we can do our intervention on the phone. If you haven't got the internet and you haven't got a phone, you can come and see us in our building.
Jane Boland from James's Place, thank you so much.